Congress convenes for a lame duck session next week, the first meeting following the November elections. Lawmakers are urging a spirit of bipartisanship in tackling the 9 appropriation bills remaining. But after a contentious campaign season, are there too many bruised feelings? What about the rest of the country? Are Americans any more divided today than last month or last year? Well, Morris Fiorina says no. He teaches political science at Stanford University and has written a new book called Culture War: The Myth of a Polarized America. Morris Fiorina joins us now from MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thanks very much for being with us.
Very nice to be here.
What are the divisions like as you see it among American citizens as opposed to what's been called the professional chattering classes, people that we would see on talk shows or hear even calling into radio shows?
Well, they're much more muted. The people you see on the talk shows and calling in are simply not representative of the broader population. They are, on the whole, much more extreme in their views, much more intense in their views, and much louder. The bulk of the population still, as it always has been, I think, is generally centrist, moderate, if you will, or maybe a good word is ambivalent, that people aren't really sure of what to do about a lot of issues, and so they tend to have less strong opinions in contrast to the people in the chattering classes.
Let me try and urge you to be issue-specific. For example, two issues which often create a lot of contention: abortion rights, and I think it's safe to say gay marriage during these last elections. How do you see the attitude of many American people in the center of this question?
Well, it's not how I see it. It's how the academic databases show that it is. Taking abortion, which we've been studying for 30 years, it's clear that the pro-choice and pro-life movements speak only for a definite minority of the population. I'd say probably maybe 10% on each side. The politicians could have compromised this years ago, as far as the American population is concerned, but it's the activist groups, the pro-life groups who now play such an important role in the Republican Party, the pro-choice groups who play such an important role in the Democratic Party, they're the ones who prevent this from being compromised.
And what about gay marriage?
Gay marriage we have much less data on, but the data we have suggests that, one, although a majority of Americans is opposed to it, they don't really, it's just not all that intense, that people in many cases don't think it's worth a constitutional amendment. There is an enlarging centrist group which thinks we ought to have civil unions, just not call what we're talking about marriage. This was not an election about moral values, despite what the punditocracy said.
Well, what about the observation of the punditocracy that this is a country that's becoming more religious, or at least the public expression of religion is becoming greater and more pertinent in politics?
In the data I've looked at, what I've been struck by is that you don't just necessarily see evidence of the influence of the religious right. You also see the impact of the secular left, that the religious gap, the church attendance gap, for instance, is about equal parts both. It's not just people who go to church often who are very religious going toward the Republicans. It's people who don't go to church who aren't religious going toward the Democrats. So we're seeing really two sides of the same coin here.
Do you have any key in mind, Mr. Fiorina, that might help make politics less polarized, at least less bruising, and that will enable greater sense of compromise and conciliation on some issues, particularly if, as you suggest, it's something that only reflects the will of the American people?
Unfortunately, people like me are, I think, better at analyzing what's going wrong than we are suggesting solutions or improvements. I'm a political scientist, not a moral philosopher. So no, I don't have any magic bullet. I just wish we'd see candidates emerge who don't choose to fight on these issues and succeed, as, for example, someone like Schwarzenegger in California.
Morris Fiorina, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. His new book is Culture War: The Myth of Polarized America. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
The United States was founded in part on the principle of religious freedom, the idea that religious faith should be a constitutionally protected right and a citizen's private concern. These days, Americans are grappling with the role of religion in public life. In the wake of the presidential election, a dividing line may be emerging between those Americans who embrace public expressions of religious faith in political debate, policy discussions, even the workplace, and those who would prefer that religion remain more private. Now, Western philosophers have wrestled with the role of religious expression in public life for centuries. Author Alain de Botton has written at length about the modern-day lessons of philosophy. He joins us from London. Mr. de Botton, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Where do you put that line, or is it as clear as a line that Western philosophers have expressed between the role of religious expression and those who feel that essentially there should be no such role?
I think there are two key features to what we would call religion. On the one hand, a set of values. How should we live? How should we arrange family life? What should we think is important and not important? And then, on the other hand, there's the idea of faith, of a belief that is not justified by reason or by logic, but is somehow felt. You know, people talk of the voice of God, of feeling a divine presence, etc. And I'd say that on the whole, philosophers have been very sympathetic to the idea of religion supporting certain values, particularly Christianity, where philosophers have heavily disagreed with religion, many philosophers, is with the idea of faith. And they have tried to say these values, which we like very much, can be and should be defended publicly through reason. We shouldn't have to say, I believe this because God told me.
I was struck on September 11th by something Prime Minister Blair said that struck me as being distinctly different from what a U.S. politician would say. He said, the attacks of September 11th were an affront to people of all faiths and people of no faith whatsoever. I don't know as a U.S. president would have added that last half sentence, no faith whatsoever.
Yes, I mean, I guess living in Europe, we are living in the most secular landmass that there has ever existed at any point in history. You know, religious belief is in a serious minority. I mean, I think it's important to remember that Europe had Voltaire, French philosopher, polemicist, 18th century critic, etc. And he launched perhaps the most powerful campaign against organized religion, and he was successful. He managed to get rid of the priest in, you know, the life of the government, education, etc. The United States never had a Voltaire, and American history went a different way. America has in many ways not been as traumatized by religion as Europe. And in a way, that's given Americans license to take religion more seriously in public life because they haven't witnessed, perhaps till now, some of the deep dangers that Europeans have observed as flowing from public expressions of religious faith.
But let me ask this, too. A lot of Americans think that they have observed the ennobling effects of religious activism. Slavery in the United States was the major movers against it began with Quakers and Mennonites and a religious-based opposition to slavery. The civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, obviously, in many ways, grew out of the activism of individual African-American churches and spread, in fact, to other congregations. These are considered great achievements in American history.
That's right. And so, as I say, I think that part of the reason why Americans are less suspicious of placing religion right at the center of public life mm-hmm. is that until now, some really pretty nice things have come out of religion, as you point out. That said, you know, like all things, there's a possibility that something nice has a darker side. A European, when seeing an American politician talk openly about religion and try and rally people around religious values, alarm bells start going off in European minds. And the alarm bell goes something along the lines of, this all looks quite fine, but doesn't it all end up in the Spanish Inquisition?
How do you tamp down the animosity? How do you get two people with, for lack of a better phrase, I'll refer to it this way, two groups of people with conflicting visions to nonetheless inhabit the same political atmosphere and reach decisions that will be respected?
One of the great defenders of this kind of liberty of public opinion was, of course, John Stuart Mill, who wrote a book in the mid-19th century called On Liberty, which was really a defense of a kind of more neutral public space where people should be allowed to follow their own beliefs, to not constantly feel that they're being indoctrinated, persuaded, watched, hectored, etc. And the whole concept, the whole language of human rights, which emerges from people like John Locke, is all about saying everyone has the right to certain things. So even if you don't like them, even if you don't like what they believe, you can't kill them. You can't persuade them to think another way, etc. You've got to rub along with them. And that's what government and society is all about, learning to rub along with people who, you know, you don't like that much, but you're going to have to get on with them anyway.
Well, Mr. Dubuton, thanks very much. We like you.
Thank you.
Alain de Botton, author of Status Anxiety, The Art of Travel, and The Consolation of Philosophy, among other books. He's also a commentator for All Things Considered.